Verse 21, Second Titus. For behold, the Lord cometh on his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood, and shall no one cover her slain. Well, let's jump all the way up to Jeremiah a moment, and then we'll take a break. This is the most graphic of all these Old Testament references to the day of the Lord. This is enough to almost make you sick to your stomach. But it's coming. It's coming. And thank God you're not going to be here. Jeremiah, chapter 25. Jeremiah, chapter 25. Let's just drop down to verse 30 to 33. Then we'll take our break. Jeremiah 25, verse 3. Therefore prophesy thou against them all these words, and say unto them, the Lord, see? The Lord, God of glory, shall roar from on high and utter his voice from his holy habitation. He shall mightily roar upon his habitation. He shall give a shout as they who tread the grapes. Remember now, if we got time in the last half of this afternoon, we'll be looking at the analogy of the grape battle. That he's treading the grapes against all the inhabitants of the earth. Now, come to verse 32. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, evil shall go forth from nation to nation. A great whirlwind shall be raised up from the borders of the earth, and the slain of the Lord, the multitudes that are going to lose their life. The slain of the Lord shall be in that day from one end of the earth even to the other. Now this is graphic. This is what your Bible says as well as mine. They shall not be lamented, neither gathered, nor buried. You know what I mean? There's going to be such a horrendous loss of life that people won't even have an opportunity or time to mourn the loss of loved ones. There's going to be such a horrendous loss of life, they won't be able to bury them naturally. But all those that are left are going to be kept full time in very fast grave. And they won't even keep up. And then look at the last part of the verse. These corpses, these dead humans, are going to be like dung upon the ground. And this is going to have to happen. So like I've already explained, we have to lose most of the 6 billion people on the earth tonight before the Lord returns. They're not all going to go into the kingdom. Just a precious small percentage. The book of Isaiah is a few. And always let people set their own percentage. What do you call a few? 5%, 6%, 7%, whatever. But only a few are going to survive this 7 years. This little remnant of Israel, now I usually do it this way. You probably think you do it on the program. This little remnant of Israel that Jesus said to fly into the wilderness, that remnant, I think, will be the 1/3 of Israel, which would be equal tonight to 5 million. The other 10 million Jews will be lost with the rest of the world. But whatever, the vast majority of the world's population is going to die in these 7 years. Now, I'm convinced that by the time we get to these last months, it's going to be a nuclear holocaust. I think by that time the nukes are going to be falling almost everywhere. And that will, of course, accomplish then this tremendous death and destruction. Not a very pretty picture, I'll grant you, but you want a prophecy? That's what you got. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back as soon as you can. And, Thank you. says it in Seth's writing, so you can hear him. Okay. Ready to go. 20 to 4. I think I'm going to backtrack just a little bit now and come back to the Lord. Remember that as soon as the Antichrist makes his appearance here, I think he'll come from Europe, sign the 7-year treaty, go back to Europe. Okay, then comes the seven seals. I better count. The appearance of the Antichrist, the first one, the second one, the third one, the fourth one, the fifth one, the sixth one, and then the seventh seal opens up at the midpoint of the tribulation, and it in turn will trigger the next seven judgments, which are the seven trumpets. So again, you can just count your mind. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Now those are the trumpet judgments. And we'll look at them just briefly. And then the seventh trumpet will in turn release the seven final judgments, or the bowl judgment, which will come just roaring on the earth. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And the seventh one will also be the time that Christ returns at his second coming. And then he sets up the kingdom, as Larry already has it up here. After the church age, then, we're raptured out. There comes the tribulation, the second coming, and then the thousand years, and then eternity. So what we're going to do now for the next little bit is look at the series of events that take place at the middle of the tribulation. Now, I've neglected to point out that that year is, I think, the same day. I think the same day that the Antichrist is signing his treaty in Israel for the 7 years. You also have the appearance of the two witnesses. And again, I feel that out of the two witnesses will come the sealing of the 144,000 young Jews. Then these 144,000 Jews will circumvent the world and be preaching the gospel of the kingdom. Not the gospel of grace, but the gospel of the kingdom, which is what Jesus and the 12 preached back there in his earthly ministry. All right, so if you'll come back with me to Revelation once again, and let's see, I'm going to try and find where we come to the beginning of the trumpet judgments. Yeah, the seven trumpets. The seven trumpets. No, I'm going to do something else. Sorry about that. Come on over to chapter 12. Chapter 12. Now that's one thing about studying Revelation. You can't just take it chapter by chapter and it won't be chronological. Revelation, you've got to jump from here, back to here, and back and forth. So even though back in chapter 8, we have the midpoint and the opening up of the seven trumpets, we also have to come to chapter 12 for other events that also take place at the middle of the tribulation. Alright, so chapter 12 of Revelation, and the reason I know that chapter 12 is in the middle of the tribulation is because we're going to be dealing with this escaping remnant that Jesus described in Matthew 24. And remember, Matthew said that when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel, when you see that happen, flee to the mountains. So we know that we're dealing with the midpoint. See, that's what you have to sort of do. You've got to shake these things apart, and then they all fit so beautifully. All right, Revelation chapter 12. There appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. Well, now you've got to know your Old Testament. Remember when Joseph had his dream? And what did he see? Well, he saw the sun, which was a symbolic gesture of his father. And he saw the moon, which was his mother. And the stars, which were his brothers, all falling down to worship him. And that, of course, indicates we're dealing with the nation of Israel. All right, now verse 2 just confirms it. And Israel, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pained to be delivered. Now that's a reference, of course, to the coming of Christ to Bethlehem. All right, now then we go all the way back into human history. Verse 3, there appeared another wonder in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, which is just another description now of Satan, and the 7 crowns upon his head. And his tail drew the 3rd part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman. Now, here you have thousands of years covered with one punctuation mark, a code. Because in verse 4, when Satan fell and the angelic host fell with him, that was even back before the Garden of Eden. And those angels are the locked up beings. Come ahead now to Jude. Come back, rather, to Jude. The little book of Jude, right in front of Revelation. So you'll see where I'm coming from. Jude. Verse 6. Little book of Jude, verse 6. And the angels who kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation. In other words, they followed Lucifer. And they left their own habitation. He had reserved in everlasting chains under darkness until the judgment of the great day. So those are the fallen angels then of Revelation chapter 12. Now remember that the demons of Christ's day, and demons as we even think of them today, are not these fallen angels. These fallen angels are locked up and reserved for the day of judgment. So what I always have to tell people, things that the Bible doesn't tell us, I cannot make any statement on it. And the Bible doesn't say one word about where present-day demons originated. The fallen angels are locked up, so they're not demons. But the Bible is silent on that, and we just have to take it by faith that they are for real, but God hasn't seen fit to tell us from whence they came. All right, so now in verse 4, the last half of the verse, goes all the way up to Christ's first coming. We go all the way from Satan's fall, which was before the Garden of Eden, and whereby he became, of course, then Lucifer, the fallen angel. Now in verse 4, we jump all the way up to Christ's birth at Bethlehem, where the dragon, Satan, stood before the woman who was ready to deliver, for to devour her child as soon as he was born. Now, you know, there's so many things you just can't possibly cover. Tonight I'll lay awake half the night thinking of all the things I should have said and did. But you want to remember, just as soon as the Lord told Satan back in Genesis 3:15, that one day the seed of the woman would appear and that he would crush Satan's head, even though Satan would get in his legs, then Satan took that cue and from that moment on did everything in his power to thwart the plan of redemption that God would bring for the embrace. He did everything to stop the coming of the seed of the woman. And there was time after time that he nearly succeeded. Now a good example, just as soon as Cain and Abel were born, and Abel was to be in the line of the seed, what does Satan bring about? Well, Abel's death. And so we're already down to no lineage for the coming of Messiah. But God in his sovereignty raised up another son of Abraham, Adam and Eve, Seth. And so out of Seth then came the lineage of which Noah was the sole survivor of yet. And then out of the 3 sons of Noah, we have Shem. And so the lineage keeps coming down the pipe. Now there was another time in Israel's history where it was down to one son had he not had a child, a son, the lineage to Christ would have been broken. It was that close. But he finally had a son, and that kept the family line going. So always look at these things, that this is the satanic effort to keep God's program from being accomplished. Now the same with the nation of Israel. Why has Israel suffered inexorably? I just read a little Jewish anecdote again the other day amongst the Jewish people themselves. This Jew was up in heaven, and God was showing him around. This Jew says, now God, tell me something. Are we Jews the chosen people? And God just, boom, yes. And he says, choose somebody else for a while. See? Well, you see, the reason Israel has been under such satanic attack is, again, Satan knows that if he can destroy Israel, he has dumped God's program. Israel has to stay on track in order for God to fulfill all the prophecies of his word. And so even today, when you see the world turning constantly against the nation of Israel, you rest assured it's the satanic powers at work. And if Satan can destroy Israel, then God is stopped. But of course, God has promised that it's not going to happen. But Satan's going to do everything he can. That's what prompted the Holocaust. Hitler was just a tool of Satan. And he really thought he could get rid of the Jewish people. Back in the book of Esther, what happened there? Haman thought that he could get rid of every Jew in the kingdom and have the program all set. But Queen Esther, of course, came to Israel's rescue by virtue of God's sovereign grace, and Israel was not destroyed. So everything that you see that is satanic in its origin is to thwart the plan of God, whether it's through the nation of Israel or through any other way that God is working. All right, so here Satan now is ready to destroy the Christ child the minute he's born. And of course, he gets to see, because the wise men, of course, did not let Herod know where the Christ child was. Now, evidently, Herod didn't find out about Christ's birth until the child was almost 2 years old. And so by that time, Joseph and Mary had fled to Egypt, but Herod, to make sure that he killed enough to include the Christ child, put out the decree, remember, to kill all the boy babies from the age of 2 downward. So we know that Herod knew there was a 2-year hiatus in there before he found out. Well, anyway, this is all referenced here as symbolism in Revelation 12. That the dragon stood before the woman to destroy the child as soon as he'd be born. Verse 5. But she, the woman, Israel, brought forth the man-child. And now here again, we leave at least 2,000 years with a comma from the time of his birth until he was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, which of course will be during the 1,000-year reign. That's when he will rule the nations. Alright? And then her child was caught up unto God at his throne. Now, we revert back again to what? The ascension. You see how this jumps forward and backwards? You gotta be able to pick it apart. First the child is born and Satan is ready to destroy it. Then the next thing we know, he's going to rule the nations with a rod of iron. That's up in the kingdom. Now we'll go back again to when he ascended. There in the Mount of Olives in Acts chapter 1. Alright? Verse 6. Now we're going to leap to the middle of the tribulation. That's why I brought you back here. Now here we're coming to the middle of the tribulation where the woman fled into the wilderness. Now that's the remnant of Israel. That's why I put this here. This remnant, this one-third of Israel. Now again, by now you should be asking, where do you get one-third? Keep your hand in Revelation. Come all the way back to Zechariah. Next to the last book of him. Zechariah chapter 13. Zechariah chapter 13. Starting at verse 8. Zechariah 13, verse 8. And it shall come to pass. You know, I love those words. You know what I mean? There's no doubt. There's no doubt. It's going to happen. God in His sovereignty will make sure of it. And it shall come to pass. And in all the land, that is the land of Israel, saith the Lord, two parts therein shall be cut off and die. Two-thirds. But the third shall be left therein. God says, I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined. I will try or test them or refine them as gold is tried. Now, those of you who have been in a chemistry lab, how do you purify metals such as mercury and silver and gold? Well, you heat it. You heat it. The hotter it gets, the more impurities come to the top. All right, so what's the implication? Israel is going to go through some tremendous trials and tribulations. And so they shall call on my name, and I will hear it at the end of the tribulation. And then the Lord will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Lord is my God. All right, back to Revelation now then again, chapter 12. And so now this remnant of Israel is going to flee into the wilderness at the midpoint, as Jesus instructs, coming out of the prophecy in Daniel, remember. And she will flee to the wilderness, where she has a place prepared of God. I remember when I started this study this morning, I said, as soon as we get into this seven-year period of human history, everything practically is going to be super, super natural. Everything is going to be in the realm of the supernatural. Now, what I'm talking about, for example, when God brought the plague on Egypt. Was that a common everyday occurrence? Why heavens? No. That was so supernatural you and I can't comprehend it. And then God even got to the place where He put an invisible wall around Goshen, where Israel was occupied, that the flies couldn't even go in and torment Israel. An invisible wall. Well, then you come to the Red Sea experience. Why, that doesn't happen every day. Oceans don't just open up. But it did that. Supernatural. Then God fed him with manna in the wilderness for 40 years. Every day? Occurrence? No. Supernatural. And so, the same way with this final 7 years. Everything is going to be done in a supernatural mode. That's how the Antichrist will bring in a seven-year treaty when none of our presidents or secretary of state could do it. It's going to take a supernatural act of God to bring on peace in the Middle East. All right, now here again. Supernaturally, God is going to establish someplace, I don't know where, something is Petra, it could be. We've been there. It seemed like a logical place. But whatever, God is going to prepare. And were you with the Petra? Chip? All of a sudden I thought you were there with me. But anyway, He's going to prepare a place for Israel where He's going to feed her, have water. It's going to be a replica of the 40 years wilderness. Their clothes won't wear out. Their shoes won't wear out. None of the horrors of the tribulation around them are going to touch them. He's going to supernaturally provide and protect somewhere out there in the wilderness. All right, read on. So they have a place prepared of God that they, the Godhead, should be there 1,260 days. That's 3.5 years. See how meticulous God is? From the midpoint of the tribulation back to the end, 3.5 years. 1,260 days. All right, now I'm going to jump across the page, at least in my Bible, to verse 14. Now to this woman, this escaping remnant of Israel, the one third. I'm going to put a tentative number of 5 million, which is about the same as was in the wilderness coming out of Egypt. But you know, most people don't know that. Most people think of that little ragtag group of several hundred that you saw in the Ten Commandments. Listen, when Israel came out of Egypt, even the modern-day rabbis are now agreed that it was anywhere from 3 to 6 million people. And I got my first number when I started teaching it years ago from the number of foot soldiers that Israel numbered when they came out of Egypt, which was 600,000. All you have to do is just sit down with somebody, you can leave the television off, get out a little calculator, and you just start calculating how many people does it have, do you have to bring about 600,000 young men between the age of 20 and 26 and single. See, that's what Israel used for men of war. And of course, there were times when I doubted my own numbers. But again, I read a book by a rabbi, I think the same one I referred to earlier. And he used almost the same calculations that I had. In order to have 600,000 young men between the age of 20 and 26, unmarried, who were men of war, you'd have to have a minimum of 3 million people, more likely 5. And so I feel uncomfortable that the number of Israelites that came out of Egypt was around 5 million people. Now, if you think I'm stretching it, you go back to the book of Numbers sometime when Balak, the king of Moab, sent for Balaam. I'll leave it now. And when he took Balaam up to the mountain high, what did he tell him? Now, did Balaam look as far as the eye can see? There they are. Well, who was he talking about? Israel. Way beyond the horizon, there were Israelites. And so I'm not stretching it. When I say that there was probably 3 to 5, 6 million people. Now, in our neck of the world, I always like to refer to Dallas-Fort Worth. Dallas-Fort Worth is between 3 and 4 million people. Can you imagine Dallas-Fort Worth moving out into the wilderness? I don't know how big some of your cities are. I suppose they're even bigger now. I don't want to mention, but at least I know what Dallas and Fort Worth is. But imagine. But God provided. Have you ever seen that thing on the internet where somebody reduced it to logistics? If you were in the service or if you were an army in charge of logistics, and he had it all reduced to train loads. The trainloads of food that had to be provided every day for 5 million people. The trainloads of tank cars that it would take to provide their water. The trainloads of wood that they would have needed to cook their fires. And it's unbelievable that God provided. See, this is what we have to realize. That when we teach these things concerning the miraculous, supernatural things of the 7 years, don't just shake your head and say, it can't happen. God's done it before. He's done it before. All right, now then. Verse 13. When the dragon, old Satan, when he saw that he was cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman, which brought forth the man child. Now, of course, I'm going to have Jim jump up now. I hate to do that to you, Jim, but anyway, you want to remember now that at the midpoint,